Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, it's day one of the French Open 2021. The sun is shining, at least in the UK. Apologies if you're somewhere in the world where the sun is not shining. But here it very much is. It's been shining in Paris as well today. David, Matt and myself, we're all feeling the joys of spring slash summer. Matt's wearing a sort of Parisian-y t-shirt. Been a lot of interest, Matt, from followers of our Instagram account in where that shirt is from.
It's my French Open shirt. I think it was the Nike line that was supposed to be out in the spring last year, and it never saw the light of day. And I bought one for myself, and it's a top sort of French Open themed. It's got croissant and tennis courts on it, French flags in Nike swoosh shape. Yes.
It's a treat. If Nike would like to sponsor us, that would that would be fine. David, how are you doing?
They haven't been in touch yet.
No.
Yes, I'm fine.
They've not been in touch, but you know, they've not seen Matt modelling their stuff before now.
Well, that's a point. Yeah, and today's a bit, as you say, it's a bank holiday, so they wouldn't be in touch today, would they? So in a couple of days' time, having digested what Matt's wearing, I'm expecting a call. Fantastic.
Anyway, Clang, head to our Instagram account for excellent hashtag content, including your daily updates on what Matt Roberts is wearing. It's been a proper day of Grand Slam tennis, hasn't it? A proper, proper day. Officially, day one didn't feature the much talked about brand new night sessions at Roland Garros. But here we are at 8.15 UK time, 9.15 French time, watching Tsitsipas midway through the first set against Jeremy Chardy. So in the French Open doesn't have a night session today news, the French Open very much seems to be experiencing a night session. It's 3-3. In fact, Tsitsipas did have a break in this opening set, but Chardy, friend of the pod, or certainly friend of David Whittaker, is fighting back. So we'll keep you posted on that soon to be out of date tennis news. We've got in date tennis news. There's been a lot of it today on day one of the French Open. There've been very big, notable results tennis wise. There's also been kind of big news or big happenings, big rumblings away from the court. The day started on Philippe Chatrier at 11 a.m. with Naomi Osaka, the world number two, thrown out onto court first up against Patricia Maria Thiege, one of the favourite players of Dan Evans. Fun fact about Thiege, more on Evans later. Not one of his best days, not least because his gal Thiege lost in straight set 6-4, 7-6 to Naomi Osaka. Decent performance from her, just greater weight of shot than Patricia Maria Thiege. I was really struck by how much of an impact her weight of shot was having on the clay. You know, she can make those shots stick. She can make her power count on the clay. It's just the movement that's a problem. She gets stuck in the mud. And when she gets out of position, it can all go horribly wrong. But the shots work on clay. That's what struck me about that performance today.
Yeah, it was a better performance from Osaka than I was expecting, probably. I loved her intent right at the start to, as you say, try and hit through the court. And there was a very long second game of the match where she had multiple break points. And I thought, this is very important for Osaka. She needs to win these little battles just to build up her confidence, sort of chunk by chunk, I think, on the clay. And she did win that game. She won the first set. Second set went to a tie break. It was a close match. Thieg, as you said, good player on clay, titleist on clay in the past, caused a lot of problems, especially with that slice. But yeah, I thought Osaka was pretty good. I think she hit 39 winners overall in the match. And yeah, it was a demonstration that when her game is working, it can still work on clay. It's just about, as you said, the movement and being able to find it consistently enough, I think.
Mm. So she wins through in a second set tiebreak. David, I'd like you to sort of try and describe the demeanour of Fabrice Santoro during his loitering with intent at the side of the court experience before sort of going in for the approach to Osaka about whether or not she'll do the on-court post-match interview, because nobody knew if that was going to happen, whether that comes under the umbrella of press, of media, which she said she wasn't going to partake in. It's a tricky assignment for Santoro, I would say.
Tricky assignment for me trying to describe it. However, I can relate to how Fabrice Santoro is feeling in that moment. You and I, Catherine, have both been in positions where we've stood courtside, being the person who needs to approach a player either to organise an interview or to do an interview. And sometimes it can be very difficult depending on what's going on. I must say, I've never been in a position quite like he was in today, where this has become an international sporting incident that she is or isn't going to speak publicly. And he shuffled over looking like somebody who's about to meet the parent of somebody they're going out with for the first time.
Which was accentuated by the fact that he was carrying flowers.
Yes, exactly. Yes, flowers for the mother of the person you are very much hoping is going to approve.
Inexplicably, Fabrice Santoro gets sort of thrown into the fray with a basket full of flowers for Naomi Osaka's mother. It was highly bizarre. It was Mother's Day in France today. Apparently.
I always get a brief moment of panic when it's Mother's Day in another country.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh my God, I forgot on Mother's Day.
And there's another one in America, and we've got a different one. So there's at least three, and there's probably many, many more. Mm. But anyway, he managed to get the words out, and sure enough, she did the on-court interview, which was itself a pretty awkward affair.
Well, really. I mean, I genuinely don't know what was said because they hadn't sorted out the. They hadn't sorted out the audio for broadcast. It obviously worked within the stadium. You could hear that it was going out in Chatteray, but it was all echoey and, completely inaudible for me. So I will never know what the few words that we did get from Naomi Osaka, I'll never know what they were.
Yeah, well, I heard them. I think it kind of depended which channel you were on, which feed you were getting, because it started off, as you say, very echoey, and eventually it started to feed through the actual broadcast sound. And it was awkward. I mean, look, sometimes Naomi Osaka interviews can be awkward because she will not necessarily answer a question in a typical way. And sometimes it leads to absolute gold and other times it leads to awkwardness. This one was more of the latter. And I think it's probably accentuated by the fact that we have this standoff, this statement from her about what she's not going to do, and nobody completely knew where they stood. So, it was three questions, three pretty cursory answers, and off she went.
Off she went, and then not long afterwards, we receive a statement. I first saw it reported by Stuart Fraser of The Times, reporting that she was fined $15,000 for refusing to do a post-match press conference. And there was a statement released on behalf of all the Grand Slams reporting that the Roland Garros teams asked her to reconsider her position after the match and tried unsuccessfully to speak with her to check on her well-being. Further in the statement, it said, "We have advised Naomi Osaka that should she continue to ignore her media obligations during the tournament, she would be exposing herself to possible further code of conduct infringement consequences. As might be expected, repeat violations attract tougher sanctions, including default from the tournament." And it references the code of conduct article in play there. "And the trigger of a major offence investigation that could lead to more substantial fines and future Grand Slam suspensions. We want to underline that rules are in place to ensure all players are treated exactly the same, no matter their stature, beliefs or achievement. As a sport, there is nothing more important than ensuring no player has an advantage over another, which unfortunately is the case in this situation. If one player refuses to dedicate time to participate in media commitments, while the others all honour their commitments. Finally, all Grand Slams remain committed to continually reviewing and discussing opportunities together with the tours and the players to improve every aspect of the player experience, including with the media. But we consider this is only ever achieved through respectful and constructive discussions." So if some of the responses to Naomi Osaka have been sensitive, albeit perhaps condemning the ultimate action, but sensitive to her state of mind and her well-being and disposition, while this statement nods to, you know, sensitivity for her state of mind, that's a threat in there, isn't it? That is a threat of default from the tournament. That is a threat of some very hefty sanctions, and it's a significant escalation of what's developing into a bit of a cold war. What do we think of that statement?
It's basically an ultimatum. Mm. And I was quite taken aback by it. I wasn't expecting something like that. I wasn't expecting a coordinated approach from all four major tournaments.
Well, it takes a lot to get one of those.
Yeah, it does. And that felt like, right, we're stamping down on this straight away. We're sending a message to every other player. And not only that you mustn't follow in her footsteps, but also that we are aware that what I was discussing last night, there is a fairness issue to a player not doing what everybody else is doing and having the financial resources to just be able to do that, whereas some players wouldn't. And whilst I felt that last night and immediately after she posted the statement that was an element to the story, but I was still shocked by this. This wasn't what I would have anticipated. And my immediate reaction to it was to feel a little bit more like you were both feeling when we were talking about it last night, which is just what a shame it all is. And whereas in a way I feel a bit uncomfortable with it. I feel like it's a bit too much, really. Mm. Was my instinctive reaction. I get it. I really do get where they're coming from, but I slightly just, oh no, really? Are we going there already? Was my immediate feeling on it. And I don't like this, where it's going at all. I mean, I still feel that she made a very bad misjudgment and but at the same time, I think, come on, everybody, we just need to now, maybe this is the line in the sand. Now, let's calm down and let's diffuse this and let's sort it out, because I am wary that she might decide to say, well, okay, I'm not going to be pushed around. And I mean, where do we go from next? Does she pull out the tournament? Does she go on strike? I think they're possibilities. I have absolutely no knowledge at all. I don't know her. I don't know how she feels about it. But when she believes in something, we've seen that she's prepared to stand her ground on things. Even though I think actually on this one, I think she should have taken a different course of action initially. I just hope we don't have that. I hope we can pull back from where we are.
I don't have much to add to that, really. It made me uncomfortable, and it felt like a very, you know, I think Hannah on Twitter used that, well, that escalated quickly, GIF. It did feel like, it felt like, okay, maybe not 0 to 100, but, you know, somewhere close to 0 to somewhere close to 100, all in the space of about half an hour. And I understand where the Grand Slams are coming from, you know, I think we expressed all of that yesterday. I just can't help but feel how much of a lonely place Naomi Osaka must be in at the moment. It must be very tough to be her. And yes, she is inadvertently invited some of that, I think. But I still feel for her, and this is the extent of this Cold War feels unnecessary to me.
Yeah, I agree. It felt surprising. I mean, I think the wording of the code of conduct is quite vague in this instance. I don't think anyone expected that skipping each press conference would count as repeat violations. So I'm not
an escalation.
I'm not sure anyone saw this coming in that way. But yeah, it just feels quite heavy-handed, disproportionate response, perhaps. You know, when you consider many of the things that have happened in tennis, you know, offences which haven't led to a very coordinated, very swift joint statement from all the Grand Slams, this seems a bit odd that they've chosen this one to go with, that kind of coordinated, I don't want to say attack on Osaka, but I like your word threat. It did feel like that. It doesn't feel like this is the way to go. I think I'm pleased that they've said that they tried to speak with Osaka, but I think it sounds like they've given up quite quickly with that. I think there's an opportunity here for important dialogue to take place before we arrive at any of these bigger threats.
It's clearly wound them up, hasn't it, by the way, Catherine? Yes. There's an element of that. Hold on, we've tried to get in touch with you, and you've not got back in touch with us. Right then, that's that.
Yeah, it does feel like that. I mean, the irony of all of it is, when I saw that statement, my initial reaction was, well, I'd love to hear what Naomi Osaka thinks about that. And I'm sure she'd have a really intelligent, considered response to it. It's just such a shame that, yeah, we're not getting to hear what she thinks about it. But that's that. We are where we are. We've had, fairly predictably, Alexander Zverev prior to his match against what is Otter's first name? I'm so distracted by the Oscar Otter. So distracted by the fact that he's named after one of my favourite animals, that I neglected his first name. A match where he went two sets love down, incidentally, but fought back and won. A very bizarre five-set match, because even at two sets love down, it never quite felt like he was going to lose. And the second he went to break up in the third, it all went Zverev's way incredibly quickly. But anyway, as reported by Luka Jacobs on Twitter, Luis Engzel told Zverev at the coin toss that he's late again for the coin toss. And he replied with, "You know how Naomi said you can find her for every single match she's not at the press conference? You can find me for every single match being late." So, in predictable developments news, that is a thing that has happened. But anyway, Zverev safely through to the second round of the French Open, not something that can be said of number 4 seed Dominic Thiem. He followed Naomi Osaka onto the Philippe Chatrier court. He was taking on the world number 68, Pablo Andujar, of pooping on the Roger Federer comeback party in Geneva fame a couple of weeks ago. And he lost from two sets up, did Dominic Thiem. He lost 4-6, 5-7, 6-3, 6-4, 6-4 in well over 4 hours. I think it's Andujar's first ever victory over a top five player. Matt had a bit of a chat to him after his win, very well-deserved win, and we'll come on to Andujar plenty in a moment. But this means not only Dominic Thiem's horror show continues, but there's now no Grand Slam champions in the bottom half of the men's draw, which is an extraordinary thing.
And a new Roland Garros finalist guaranteed.
Wow.
That's only day one. I don't...
I mean, yeah. Look, I know we talked about the trials and tribulations of Dominic Thiem of late, but even so, this is a massive, massive day one shock.
Mm. I don't know about you, but I think the strangest thing for me was, you know, this match was going on for 4.5 hours.
It was going on. It was just always on.
And for a large portion of it, I wasn't giving it my fullest attention, which seems a strange thing to say, considering it was Thiem, who's a two-time Roland Garros finalist, a current Grand Slam champion. He was on the ropes for a lot of this match. And yet, yes, it is a big shock for sure, but it didn't have that shocking element or factor to it that made me hang on absolutely every single point and see if Thiem could fight back into it. And I think that is indicative of where Dominic Thiem is at the moment. He never felt like a huge contender to win this tournament because of where his form has been. And just trying to put my finger on what is going on with Thiem at the moment, he sounds as much at a loss as I think anyone, to be honest. He doesn't have an answer. He still feels like he's processing becoming a Grand Slam champion, but that happened quite a while ago now. It feels like he's fit, at least, so he should be able to play his tennis. But he said it perfectly. He's summing up what's wrong with his game, but he can't figure out why. And he said, my shots don't have the power on them. And that is something I've observed. I mean, Dominic Thiem at his best is an enthralling tennis player because he can dominate a court and generate so much power on his shots, push people around. Even in those first two sets today, when he was playing respectably, I didn't feel that weight, that power that Thiem has. And he said, I've lost a few percent. It just feels like that has happened.
And when you play as deep as Dominic Thiem does, those few percent, that power, that accuracy, it takes you from, you know, thunderous, shudder-inducing ground strokes to ground strokes that actually sit up pretty nicely into the hitting zone for the opponent.
It reminds me a little bit of Nadal in those couple of years where he didn't reach a Grand Slam semi-final, 2015 and 2016, I think, where suddenly, as you say, penetrating shots become shots that are almost sort of begging to be hit a little bit. I mean, even so, he was in a position to win the match and he had this strange intensity drop at the end of the third set, start of the fourth set, and that let Andujar back in and he took full advantage. And even in the fifth set, there was a little spark. I think Thiem hit a shot sort of behind his back to get the deciding set back on serve. And I thought, okay, right, here we go. He's clipped back into gear. And yet he was never able to capitalize on those moments. It's very, very strange. I mean, I'm still holding my stock on Dominic Thiem long term. I think I have to, but it is fascinating.
I do wonder if he needs like a radical change. I love Nicolas Massu as a coach, and it has obviously really worked. It's nothing to do with his skills as a coach, and maybe you keep him on board, but I feel like he maybe just needs someone to come in and shake
it up.
Feels
quite early for that to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what you mean, because I would have said if anybody had told me a player would have a dip like this after a Grand Slam victory, I would have thought he would have been the last player for it to happen to. I kind of get it from a perspective of, finally, you've climbed the mountain after all these years of trying, and then what? I do get it. I just wouldn't have expected it to happen to him. I thought he's so relentless that it would be the turbo boost he needs to go on and just break into the group at the top of the all time greats.
Because I suppose he seems quite a single minded kind of guy, doesn't he? He's, you know, he's open about that himself. You know, he doesn't get easily distracted. He's, you know, tennis, Chelsea, you know, these are the things penguins. He enjoys in life. But it's tennis, Chelsea, dogs, penguins. You know, he's not Stefanos Tsitsipas going round, you know, photographing bins in back alleys of New York and putting them on Instagram. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Tsitsipas is just safe set point a moment ago against Jeremy Shardy.
Yeah, yeah. After the loss, this is what team had to say. I was struggling with my motivation. The game is just not there today. The shots are not powerful enough, not accurate enough, not moving well enough. I don't really know why. It's not the real me or the version that can play for big titles. Pablo Andujar, though, goodness me, 35 years of age, beaten a top five player for the first time and dazzled us all with his linguistics. What a man, Matt.
I've had one of those moments with Andujar today where, you know, when someone's been in your consciousness for so long and you've thought of them a certain way, and I've suddenly realized he's not what I thought he was at all. I had unfairly pigeonholed him as a certainly very respectable tennis player with an impressive career, but not someone who is particularly interesting beyond that. Other, you know, obviously he's overcome a lot of injuries. That's all very interesting, but just I didn't know he had so much to him. And I know, David, you did, because you said you've spoken to him a few times and found him really charming and nice. And that was
David tipped us off to go to his press conference.
And that was the exact experience I had. And I just asked him about those language skills. And yeah, it turns out he speaks five languages. He was doing press in all five languages.
One of those languages I didn't know existed before today.
Valencian.
What was it?
Is that like sort of Cornish?
it's like Catalan. It's just their dialect of Catalan. But yeah, he was really great and funny in all of those languages. He spoke in French on the court, and he said that this was like a gift that tennis had given him, and it was like Father Christmas had come along in these last 2 weeks. Aww. Given that he's beaten Federer and team, and he credited that Federer win with giving him so much confidence. And he said he's been through so many injuries. He didn't win a match on the ATP Tour for 25 months at one point. His ranking fell about to 1,800 or something. And he said now he just enjoys every event he gets to play. As you said, he's in his mid-30s and he didn't think he would be having this, I don't know if it's a second wind or a third wind, whatever it is, he didn't think he would be having these moments in his career. And maybe they're not the, you know, he might not see what he's done in the last couple of weeks as the pinnacle of his career, because he's won a lot of matches, a lot of tournaments, but it's certainly the period he's enjoying the most in his career. And I just thought that was lovely.
Very uplifting story. Pablo Andujar, for everybody but Dominic Thiem and his fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Staying with Chatrier, who were sort of very behind schedule by this point, hence why we're currently watching Tsitsipas and Shardy in a first set tiebreak at 9:41 local time. The next match on Chatrier before this Tsitsipas match was two-time Grand Slam champions, Svetlana Kuznetsova, of course, the former French Open champion, and Victoria Azarenka, two-time Australian Open champion. I dipped in and out of this match. Three-set win for Azarenka in the end. David, I think, watched all of it intently and loved it. Tell us about it, David.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, initially I watched it because I had picked Kuznetsova to beat Azarenka in the newsletter predictions. We try to go with, in inverted commas, an upset victory for... I'm trying to make excuses here for the fact that we got 0 out of 3 right today between us. But
I think if there is a wooden spoon, David, it goes to Matt today, if that makes you feel any better. His guy barely got games.
It's fair. Who did you go for, Matt?
I went for Yuri Vesely to beat Karen Khachanov. I have Khachanov on upset watch sort of every day. Mm. And I was last to make my pick. There's my excuse. All the other ones have been taken. Went for that one and it was horrific.
One of the most one-sided matches of the day. Anyway, as you were, David.
Well, this wasn't. And it was all over the place score-wise. Azarenka, I mean, the first set, I think 6 of the first 7 games were breaks of serve. And Azarenka won the set 6-4. Then next thing I know, I went out to look after the kids for a bit, came back in and it was 5-love to Kuznetsova in the second set. So I'm getting very excited by this point. And then I watched the whole of the third set, and Azarenka was leading 5-1. It went, she got a break back, did Kuznetsova. But the rallies were just epic. I mean, the effort these two women, who are multi-millionaires, they've both been right at the top of the game, they both won Grand Slam titles, you know, they don't need to be doing this. And there they are just duking it out, loving the competition and the sheer rallies, because they can still play at such a high level. I think with Kuznetsova, I mean, I think she's almost got the perfect game for a clay court. She won this title, 12 years ago. But if you watch her forehand, it is just, it's a little bit like watching Barty's forehand, just lashings of topspin, the ball's just leaping off the surface when it lands. And she's strong and fit, but I do think that when players get to the age she's at now and the amount of play she's had, I think the concentration sort of goes in and out a bit more. I don't think the laser focus for an entire match is there, and I think that that's what you saw when she won that second set. There was a dip, and Azarenka took advantage. It was just a brilliant match, and who knows whether it gets easier or not, but she's certainly up against a prodigious talent next in everybody's favourite, Clara Towson.
Is she everybody's favourite?
Well, everybody's sort of cool pick.
Yes.
That, you know, she's going to be the next.
I think it was French Open last year, which of course was a lot less than a year ago, when we all first really had a sort of communal Clara Towson watching experience. And she beat Jennifer Brady, wasn't it? I just put in the agenda. Towson is happening. She won in straight sets today. And Towson against Azarenka is something I'm very much here for. Let's stay with the other results in the women's side of the draw today. A win for Petra Kvitova, 3 sets for her over Greet Minnan. Don't think she quite saved match points.
She did.
She did. Oh,
so that's definitely one to watch. I was always circle a player who saved match points in a match, and she hit a backhand cross court winner to save it, and then she was asked about it in her on court interview, and she interrupted the question and said, "Yes, I remember it. It's it's been my daily bread since I was a kid. The backhand cross court. What an amazing turn of phrase!
Give us this day or backhand cross-court winner.
Exactly.
Other results on the women's side of the draw. Paola Badosa beat Lauren Davis in straight set. She's another one that you spoke to, I think, Matt?
Yeah, I just find it very interesting because she got into this draw as a seed. She got bumped up, so she's seeded at a slam for the first time. And it's the first time I've gone into a slam expecting things from her. That's probably generally true about most people. People are talking about Badosa in a way they haven't talked about her before because of the good results she's had on clay so far this season. And I just wondered whether, just how aware she is of those outside expectations and is she putting more expectations on herself? And she made an interesting point, actually. She said that all pro players are used to having expectations because at some point they've all been at the top. You know, for example, when they're coming through as a junior, to make it as a pro, chances are you stood out as a junior. So she said, I've tried to really sort of channel that energy that I used to have to expect more of myself. And now my expectations haven't changed, but I've got proof that I can deliver on it. Before, it was a bit of a fantasy, what I hoped to achieve. But now I've won a title. I've reached the semifinal of Madrid. So I know I can do it. And, you know, she's in the Osaka section of the draw. And I think, you know, Osaka looked pretty good today. So I think that's looming as a potential third or fourth round match, which would be very, very interesting, I think.
Danka Kovanec next for Badosa. Incidentally, the next opponent for Petra Kvitova is Elena Vesnina. What a story. Wow, she is.
I haven't heard her name in a Grand Slam
draw
for
Indian Wells champion, of course.
Yeah.
And multiple Grand Slam doubles champion, I think. I think this is her first match win or her first Grand Slam match win since her comeback from having a baby. And I mean, I thought she'd retired. I don't know whether this comeback was always planned, whether it was always going to be just a break from the sport. But yeah, certainly been surprised to see her name in draws, and an incredible win for her today. Sabalenka was a winner in two sets over Konyu.
I saw a bit of that, by the way, just out of sheer curiosity.
Was it Madrid form?
Well, no. I mean, she started quite slowly. I think she was 4-2 down, Sabalenka, in the first set. And Konyu is a similarly powerful hitter. But and actually, a lot of the time, I will kind of circle a match like that and think, just imagine those two hitting big shots at each other. But invariably, what happens is it just ends up being an unforced error fest, because how can you control an opponent's pace like that and send it back with interest? I mean, occasionally you might get the odd one-off where they're both teeing off at the same time, but it's rare that they're both able to do it at the same time. And then from 4-2 down, Sabalenka just took over. And I think Konyu, she lost her way completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tough time for Konyu. I hope that that she can, you know, find that sparkle that she's shown us at points in the past, because she can be a breathtaking player on her day. Danielle Collins was a winner today over Wang Zhiyu in three sets. If you haven't had the chance to read Simon Briggs' piece about Danielle Collins and the endometriosis that she battles with on a daily basis, and what she's revealed that she's been suffering with over the past year or 2 years, it's an extraordinary piece. And Danielle Collins is an extraordinary athlete and competitor, and she was a winner today, and is one to watch, of course, at this tournament. She was a semi-finalist last year.
So can I give you a bit of Simon Briggs news?
Yeah, yes, please.
Always.
Because, I mean, you can imagine, I think just on this day generally, this is the most exciting and eventful Sunday start that we've ever had at Roland Garros. Would you agree?
I would, I mean, yes.
It just feels like just things have just been... It felt, I think for a start, the way they did the order of play just made it something better than it typically has been in the past. But then the way the matches have gone, and obviously this huge news story over Osaka, it just makes it a very meaty thing. Now, for a guy like Simon, who's covering the event for a newspaper and the Telegraph website, there's a lot to get stuck into. And anyway, we were exchanging messages a little bit earlier today, and he said to me, this was at 10 minutes to 6 p.m. He wrote, I haven't got dressed yet. I'm still in my pajamas.
Get in there, Simon.
And he also
on,
revealed
he's had his camera on in
he
press
was on
conferences
press,
today.
Press conferences, I was going to say.
Yeah, I have seen his pajamas. Face and upper body today.
And pajamas.
I was
then.
So distracted by his hair, I didn't clock the pajamas.
Perhaps that's and, his trick.
He also revealed that he'd gone out last night to an inverted commas restaurant. You read things on a list and then they bring them to you, he said. Anyway, that's Simon Briggs news. And so he wrote the endometriosis story.
Does he mean a menu?
It's a joke.
Right, okay.
And Daniel Collins. And he's also written about Yosaka and Dan Evans. Yeah, Simon's been really working very hard. Yes. So we need to be so really
make
nice
it all worthwhile for him and read his stuff. Last significant result, I think, on the women's side from today was that Angelique Kerber's hopes of a career Grand Slam have faded into obscurity for another year. I think this is a third consecutive first-round loss at the French Open for Angelique Kerber. She lost to Annalena Kalinina, 6-2, 6-4. We've talked about it before. It's always baffled me that Kerber hasn't sort of thrown her entire being into mastering clay and trying to become a French Open champion. But I suppose that result as a one-off isn't a huge surprise. But generally, Angelique Kerber at the French Open has always been, certainly over the last few years, has been a bit of a surprise to me. But she's out.
One note on the magnificently named Annalena Kalinina is just to follow up on what you were saying yesterday, Catherine, about the importance of the Grand Slam Development Fund. She's a player who has benefited from it a lot. She was given $25,000 last year by the ITF, and particularly significant last year, of course. And I found an article written by Jamie Renton on the ITF website where she just talked about how much it helped. She said, "It allowed me to prepare for tournaments. Even if the world stopped, I was able to put this money into my process to keep going, to keep training with a fitness trainer every day. A lot of months we were not earning money. We were not working. It was a difficult time for everyone. I didn't have to worry about, oh my God, how am I going to pay my physical trainer? How am I going to pay for the court?" And it helped sort of both practically and also emotionally not to have those worries as well. So yeah, she's a very good example of the good work that Grand Slam Development Fund does, and loads of players have benefited from it in the past.
Mm, that's great stuff, Matt. Really interesting.
Her name, by the way, belongs in an ABBA chorus, in my opinion.
Mm.
Annalena Kalinina. Uh-huh.
Right. Quite a few agenda points to get through and not much time, and that's really sent me way off course.
Sorry about that.
Can we get back on track? I've got, I'm all at sea. Dan Evans lost today to Mirmir Kecmanovic. He lost in four sets despite winning the first 6-1. It all looked to be very plain sailing for Dan Evans. He described the loss as a dire end to a decent clay court season. He said it's becoming a bit too common being breaks up in Grand Slam sets and not putting them away, because he was a break up in the fourth set. Looked like he was going to take it into a fifth, but just really couldn't get it going against Kecmanovic, I think it is, today, who played a really, really good match. But I think this is a terrible result for Dan Evans. I mean, he's had some rough draws in Grand Slams, which you can put a lot of his unexpected early losses down to, but he'd have been expecting a win today. He's a Monte Carlo semi-finalist, and yeah, this is a balls up really for him, and his demeanour in press afterwards indicated as much. I think he was pretty peeved at himself.
I mean, it must be very frustrating. He's having the best period of his career and his worst Grand Slam results.
Mm.
You know, this is the first time I think he's ever lost three in a row in the first round at Slams. Now, two of those have been the French Open, which traditionally has been his weakest surface. So, you know, perhaps a slightly misleading stat, but we love those. And I think the point stands, you know, he's struggling to find his best tennis in Slams. And it's interesting, there seems to be no consensus in what the best approach is for peaking at Slams. You get a lot of players who say, "I'm treating it like every other tournament." And then you get someone like Dan Evans, who really puts the pressure on himself. You know, I remember in Australia how disappointed he was with his sort of trip overall to Australia, even though he won his first title. He was most focused on the fact that he went out in the first round of the Australian Open. And it's just interesting to me that he does put that pressure on himself, that expectation on himself. I find it fascinating how you would change that mindset, because I suppose you've got to try and kid yourself, but he doesn't strike me as that sort of person. It's something he needs to overcome, I think, in these slams.
He definitely sounded to me like he was going to do some serious thinking as a result of this one. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of form he's in on the grass. Kei Nishikori has cemented his status, if it ever needed doing, as the best unnecessary five-set player of all time.
Yeah. Both, I mean, he just about leads Alexander Zverev in terms of getting into unnecessary five-set matches, but his ability to extricate himself and just tot up that particular statistic, should that be of any value in the rest of his life, is unparalleled. It's just that he empties his canister along the way and ends up hitting a brick wall of fatigue halfway through Grand Slams, doesn't he? That's kind of, since 2014 in his US Open final, that's what Kei Nishikori does.
Mm. Yeah, but anyway, he won today in five sets. What's his five-set record now, Matt?
Do you think I'm being harsh, Matt?
No, I'm just sad about the fact that that's the truth.
I was looking at Matt, so he was
also... he looked crestfallen.
Really?
I like Kei Nishikori.
Hang on, let's end on a Kei Nishikori positive. What's his Grand Slam? What's his five-set record?
Well, I think this is the point. It's an incredible record, but is it a positive? It's
just read out the record and let it speak for itself, and we'll move on.
Okay, 25 wins, 7 losses.
Great.
But that's extraordinary.
Great stuff, Kei.
Well done, Kei.
Yeah. Looking at the positives for Kei Nishikori, on the very much less positive front, a really gutting day today for Grigor Dimitrov, who retired after having led 2-0 and 5-1 against Marcus Giron. Really, really sad scenes for Dimitrov. I think it's the back injury, the same back injury that troubled him at the Australian Open against Karatsev. Horrible to see for one of the fittest guys on tour. He's always been such a fit, you know, for all his frailties, his body hasn't been one. So for his body to be failing him is a tough one to see. So we wish you well, Grigor, and we'll see you on the grass. Which leaves me just to whiz you through tomorrow's order of play. As I speak to you, Stefanos Tsitsipas has taken a very close first set, 7-6, over Jeremy Shardy, and it's early stages of the second. So tomorrow, it's the defending champion, Iga Świątek, opening things up against Kaya Juvan on Châtrier. Then it's Bublik against Medvedev. I reckon that'll be at about 11:45 UK time, so cancel whatever you've got on for that.
Who's winning that?
Well, I think Bublik, and I know Daryl, our predictions competitor, has listened to me yesterday saying Bublik would win and nicked that prediction, because he's gone for Bublik.
I'm going Medvedev.
Okay. Then it's Istomin against Federer. Federer gets a not before time, which is very nice for him, isn't it? That's not before 4 p.m. local, 3 p.m. in the UK. And then the first night session match on Châtrier, or the first official night session match.
Yeah, it's actually about the 18th.
Yeah. It's not even the first this week. Serena Williams takes on Arina Camelia Begu. On Longlin, first up it's Sinner against Herbert, then Siegmund against Garcia, then Kenin against Ostapenko, and then Tsonga against Nishioka. That's a heck of a schedule on Longlin. I reckon a couple of those matches could end up being crackers. Simon Mathieu, the pick of the matches there is probably Ruud against Pear, and then Muguruza against Kostyuk. And there's plenty more elsewhere. Really, it's an even busier, fuller schedule of matches tomorrow. Lorenzo Musetti against David Goffin on court 14. To the last up on court 14. Bianca Andreescu's playing out there. Querrey against Isner. That's first up. That could roadblock court 14 and create a night session over there as well. So brilliant order of play for tomorrow. It's been a cracking day one at the French Open. It's still going because they've got floodlights and they're definitely having a night session. As I look at my screen, Jeremy Shardy is fist pumping and he looks like he's settled in for a big one. So that's been your day one French Open tennis podcast. We'll be back with another one tomorrow when our mascot will be, as it is for the whole fortnight, Phoebe and Lucci. Lucci's no longer with us, but Phoebe is. Lovely, lovely corgis. Big fan of corgis. We will have our own mascots. I've got Zeus, Matt's got Scouse or Mousel, David's got Rogue. We promise, or we pledge, we hope to do a better job for them tomorrow. Billie Jean's got Billie Jean King. She hasn't covered herself in glory today either. She rolled in horse poo and I've had to douse her in dry shampoo. Our executive producer is Chris Albert Lee. Read Simon's stuff, leave us an Apple Podcasts review, tell your friends, and join us again tomorrow for our day two French Open tennis podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.